Chapter 29. Into the Catacombs. The Palace Beckoning. Zaitus found him at the summit of the tower, head bowed, crouched on one knee. Smoke rose from armor still shimmering with heat. Vulcan unclenched his fist, releasing a handful of ash that dispersed quickly in the air.
"They're gone, Father," said Zaitus,
his own warplate scorched by the cleansing flame.
"What did you see?"
Vulcan asked, his voice a rasp.
"I saw a figure, clad in gold,"
said Abedemi, limping as he brought up the rear.
"As resplendent as the sun."
Zaitus nodded. He had reached for Vulcan as his father crushed the fulgurite and unleashed what power remained within. He had seen something within the firestorm before he'd had to close his eyes or be struck blind. Upon opening them again, the horde had vanished. Not fled, but gone. Erased. Smote.
"I saw Numion take a blade to the fulgurite. I saw it withstand all efforts to destroy it. Even the heart of Deathfire could not touch it, and yet you merely close your fist."
Zaitus dared Vulcan's gaze, but received no answer to his question.
"They know we are here,"
Vulcan said, rising and reclaiming his hammer, unsteady at first, but growing stronger.
"And they will be hunting us. The palace is close."
He gripped the talisman.
"I can feel it. The presence of my father. The Emperor is with us, my sons."
"My lord, I do not trust this," Zaitus began.
Vulcan put a hand on his shoulder, father to son.
"I cannot give you answers, Beric. I don't have them. Ever since I returned, I have known a single truth, that I must reach Terra. The talisman is aligned to my fate somehow. I forged it for a purpose, one given to me by my father, one which I do not yet understand. I do not believe I could have fashioned the talisman had I not perished and been reborn, had I not been imbued with part of the Emperor's will bound into that spearhead of stone. But we cannot linger. The fulgurite is gone. It has served its end at last and given us a moment's respite. We cannot squander it, my son."
Zaitus wanted answers. He had never possessed Numion's faith, or Abedemi's spiritual belief, or even Gargo's blunt acceptance. Vengeance had driven him, not belief. He had many questions. In the end, he settled for just one.
"Which way?"
They left the city, chased by an intangible hunger, the thing that had tasted Vulcan's immortal soul when they had passed through the warp. They found a passageway and a great stone stair that led deeper, below the city. Descending into a series of catacombs, the Drakes discovered further evidence of the Mechanicum's presence in the Eldritch tunnels. Strange, dormant machines littered every artery and conduit, their function unclear. The dead lingered here, too, more of the Custodes and the Silent Sisterhood, entire cohorts of Mechanicum Thalax, Castellax, and Skitari, and even the cold shells of Titans, the sight of their stricken bodies as impressive as it was appalling. An urgency burned within Vulcan. It had seen them through the city and to the labyrinth beneath. It had brought them to the very edge of where one world met another. And it was here the Drakes came to a halt. Standing amongst the corpses of the fallen war machines, they saw an army. Not of men or machines, but of monsters. Of demons. A gateway loomed, far, far ahead like a distant horizon. A door to Terra, to the palace itself. A sliver of light, just a crack, remained. A passage through the door. But it would not stay open for long. A second army, arrayed before the gate, fell back in full retreat, holding off the horde and dying as they did it. Titans and warriors, clad in golden plate armor, fought ferociously to stem the demon tide. Great swathes of the dead had been left in their wake, their fallen abandoned in the desire to survive, to fight on. Stragglers feasted on this carrion, small knots of demons picking at the bones and sucking deep of the soul marrow. Further on, in the midst of the battle, a reaver fell. The great war machine smote to ruin by a winged beast wielding a blood-red axe. A second smaller engine collapsed to one knee and then fell forwards, harried by a swarm of capering iridescent beasts. A phalanx of Martian automata reacted, their beam weapons emitting a collimated blaze of light and fury, until their bearers were overwhelmed by a flock of shrieking monstrosities, and the beam flickered, then died. Custodians and their ancient contemptor brethren fought atop the wrecks of destroyed tanks, trying to hold back the wretched swarms amassing below. Golden jetbikes contested the unnatural skies with winged screamers and demons riding strange fleshy discs. So distant was the fighting, discerning any further meaning was all but impossible. Vulcan's eyes narrowed as he beheld the battle.
"That door leads to Terra. The Imperial dungeon is beyond," he said. "My father awaits. He will hold the way open for us, but we must hurry."
Hope was rekindled for a moment as Vulcan made to head off towards the gate and the battle, but then Zaitos stepped into his path.
"You cannot mean to wade into that. To reach the gate, you would have to pass through it. No man, no god can withstand that."
"There are no gods," Vulcan warned.
"My lord, they are before us."
Vulcan did not argue. His resolve remained unchanged, however.
"Gods or not, that is our path."
"There has to be another way. Brothers,"
said Zaitos.
"It is certain death,"
said Abedemi. Even Gargo's belief faltered.
"Perhaps there is another path. Earlier I saw a branching tunnel."
"Enough," said Vulcan.
And then more softly,
"Enough."
He shut his eyes and pressed his forehead against the head of Erdrakul.
"It is our path, but it is death. This cannot be the only way. It cannot end."
Vulcan stopped and opened his eyes. Zaitos met his gaze.
"I hear it too,"
he said. Some of the feasting demons estranged from the battle had begun to turn. A few lapped at the air with their tongues. They scented prey, but they were still too far away to be a threat. The sound was not coming from them. A low drone, just at the edge of hearing, filled the air. It gnawed at the senses, an irritant, growing louder and more insistent.
"The mist returns,"
said Abedemi, as a yellow fog began to gather. It rose quickly, climbing the tunnel walls, spreading until it shrouded the battle from sight and impeded the way ahead.
"That is no mist," said Vulcan,
and readied his hammer. The droning resolved into the frenzied beating of hundreds of thousands of diaphanous wings, and a swarm of flies materialized around the drakes, who clamped on their helms. The fly cloud swirled, then coiled and uncoiled, like the turning of a fetid screw, a noisome murmuration that barred the way back. Caught between the yellow miasma ahead and the swarm behind, the drakes were trapped in a stretch of tunnel barely 50 paces long. Even the walls closed, laden with a spontaneously growing fungus. Filth rapidly encrusted the fallen titans. The bodies of dead custodians swelled with sudden putrefaction, their skin undulating with the slow peristalsis of maggots. The mist had lost its incorporeality and become a barrier of solid putrescence. Abedemi hacked at it with Draucorus, but found it unyielding.
"Oh, that stench!"
said Gargo.
"The hunger has found us," Vulcan replied,
his eyes on the swarm as it began to coalesce. Slowly, through the blur of fat insect bodies, flesh began to materialize. At first a gnarled finger, the yellow nail chipped and dirty, then a flabby arm, skin hanging off it in folds like a grubby sail. Another arm followed, as wretched as the first, a torso. A gut bloated and distended, girded by layers of fat. Pustules and boils protruded under the skin, ripe and fit to burst. Cloven feet, stumpy legs consumed under rolls of flesh. At last a stubby head, its many chins framing a grinning mouth filled with needle teeth. A single milky eye blinked in childish amusement, the other gummed shut with seeping pus. A long lascivious tongue slithered loose to lap at sagging, sore-encrusted breasts. A broken horn jutted from its forehead, crowned by a pair of rotten antlers. Gargo retched within his helm, a spray of vomit painting the inside of his faceplate.
Steady, brothers, said Zaitos, grimacing at the sheer foulness of the thing. Blood of Deathfire, hissed Abidemi, fending off his own nausea. It is beyond repellent. Father, how do we kill this thing? Asked Zaitos.
Scowling, Vulcan waited until that moment to put on his helm.
You cannot help me here. All of you, he said, striding towards the beast. Stay back.
The yellow fog gathered in Vulcan's wake. Zaitos tried to plow through it, but wisps of decaying matter entangled his legs. So mired, he could not follow. Instead, he had no choice but to retreat. In seconds, the miasma solidified as before, and the drakes found themselves encased in a cage of rot. They were not alone for long. The maggots had gored their way outside of their host bodies and began to hatch.
Gargo, said Zaitos, held wrapped by the rapid metamorphosis. Does that flamer still have fuel?
Gargo hefted his spear, leveling the flamer he had attached to the blade at the corpses.
It does, brother. Then by Vulcan, let them burn!
The beast waddled with disgusting slowness. The last of the flies absorbed into the meat of its body, or lazily snatched by its tongue. It chuckled as it regarded Vulcan. And then it spoke.
Take up thy black tongue and preach the words of rot.
Its voice gurgled like a festering sinkhole, a bubbling clangor of corruption.
Behold,
it said, stretching wide its flabby arms as if to encompass its own majesty.
Aghalbor, bringer of poxage.
I see you, filth, snarled Vulcan, and felt his gorge rise. This is Erdracule, the burning hand. I'm going to use it to reach into your foul innards and immolate you.
Aghalbor tittered, an utterly incongruous and abhorrent noise from such a beast.
Let root and bower blight to feed the plague of fortune.
A crust of pestilence crept across Vulcan's armor, hardening across the joints. He felt it slowing him down, feeding atrophy into his bones, cancers into his muscles. He fell, leaning on the haft of his hammer to stay upright.
Let bones succumb to canker and flesh to waste,
cooed the demon, chuckling as it reached for a bony hilt sticking out from one of its many folds of greasy flesh.
Seven times seven times seven. Hark now, the tolling bell of the pox, the virulence of life unending, the disease unbound.
Erdracule burst into flame, scouring the filth scabbing Vulcan's armor, burning it away into flakes of ash. His strength returned, fueled by an inner fire.
Are we to fight, demon, or must I endure more of this vapid poetry?
Aghalbor's face contorted into an approximation of distaste.
Spawn of the anathema! Aghalbor shall make a sport of it, if thou wish.
Wrapping chubby fingers around the hilt, the beast drew forth a great cankerous sword from its gut, the edge pitted and gleaming with corruption.
Quoth no more,
it uttered, its humour abruptly evaporated. Vulcan barely leapt over the canker sword, the demon much faster than its bulk would suggest. He swung Erdracule, but it was like hitting solid rock. Even the fire could find no purchase on the demon's rubbery hide. Aghalbor laughed as tendrils of ropey flesh speared from wounds that had opened in its flesh, coiling around the Primarch's arms, pinning them to his sides. Erdracule seared his armor, and Vulcan had to douse its flame, his fingers scrabbling for the deactivation stud. He felt a pull and braced his legs, but the demon's strength was prodigious. Slowly, boots scraping against the ground, Vulcan was dragged towards it. He gagged, spitting up a clot of black blood, and looked down to see the canker sword impaled in his chest. The demon's laughter resounded in his ears as the blade slid free. The flesh tendrils uncoiled, allowing Vulcan to collapse to his knees. He let Erdracule fall, then sank to all fours, coughing up thick yellow phlegm, a host to a riot of diseases. He heard shrieking laughter and realized it came from the fat flies still buzzing around the demon. Vulcan felt his chin rise, lifted by Aghalbor's rancid tongue. Its breath seared the faceplate of his helm. A crack stitched the left retinal lens, and he wrenched the helm off in order to breathe. Glaring at Vulcan through its milky eye, the demon tutted as if reprimanding a willful child. It slid the canker sword back into its sheath, the blade accepted greedily by its fatty excess. Its tongue lengthened, entwining Vulcan's limp body. The Primarch barely had strength enough to grab and hold on to his hammer, let alone swing it. Like him, it would soon be devoured by Aghalbor's widening maw, which slavered in anticipation.
"Such a morsel," the demon burbled,
eyelid fluttering, skin trembling as it pushed Vulcan down into its gullet. The fly swarm burned. In their death throes, they tried to bite and sting the drakes, but legionary warplate proved proof against them. Zytos crushed the last beneath his boot in a spray of rank innards.
"What now?" asked Gargo, his armor smeared in greenish blood. "Torch the bodies, brother. Every corpse that could be a host. Leave no scrap of this filth. And what of the Primarch?"
Zytos looked to Abedemi, who had sagged onto his haunches, but for all his relentless efforts, the fetid barrier appeared unscathed. Abedemi shook his head.
"It cannot be breached. Not by any means we possess."
Zytos stared grimly at the barrier, willing it to reveal what was happening on the other side. Its opacity mocked him. He saw only shadows, suggestions of a struggle.
"Zytos!"
He turned at the sound of Gargo's voice and saw him gesture to the other barrier. Shadows lurked here too, though much closer, following the scent of prey. A horde had gathered. Vulcan drowned in pestilence. He fought, but the flabby tongue pulled him in further. He tried to grasp a breath, but a pudgy hand pushed him down and he swallowed filth. Digestive acids ate at his armor. He descended, and all sense of reality faded as he sank ever deeper. Foulness without end existed beyond the demon's gullet. It was a gateway to another realm, a great and fetid garden into which Vulcan was slowly being consumed. Erdrakul had slid from his grasp, but he refused to yield. His fingers brushed against the talisman of seven hammers. It felt warm to the touch, and for the briefest moment his mind filled with the vision of endless fire. He blinked and stood before a world aflame, its cities and monuments mere shadows in the flickering haze, before he too burned. Except he wasn't burning, he was drowning. But something remained of the fire. He felt it stir within Erdrakul. The heat of its awakened power reached him through a mire of wretched innards. He should be dead but for his father's gift. Clawing through the foulness, the rumblings of Aghalbor's tortured gut thunderous in his ears, Vulcan found the activation stud upon the weapon's haft and lit the hammer. Fire blazed into being, purifying, rampant, hotter than before, a furnace. The demon recoiled, its throat clenching, corruptive acid rushing upwards, its stomach lurched. Hefting Erdrakul one-handed, both blind and deaf, Vulcan seized Aghalbor's tongue with his other hand. It dangled cruelly, a rancid lifeline. Gauntleted fingers dug into rubbery flesh and pulled. A panicked choke escaped the demon's lips. Its mouth opened as it tried desperately to swallow. Vulcan took a breath and thrust with his hammer. Aghalbor squealed in pain, several needle teeth cracked by the blow. It retched, releasing a flood of corruption and the bedraggled body of a Primarch. Staggering to his feet, his armor seared but intact, Vulcan yanked on the demon's tongue and tore it out. Ignoring its gurgled protests, he charged at Aghalbor and fed his fury into Erdrakul. Hurt but not defeated, the demon unsheathed its canker sword. Vulcan shattered it. He smashed in Aghalbor's milky eye and broke off an antler. The talisman grew warm against his chest, and Vulcan yoked its strength. He struck again, and again, and with every blow that followed, the demon shrank, wheezing like a slowly deflating bladder, until nothing but pieces of decaying flesh remained. The flesh began to discorporate, withering against Erdracul's cleansing fire, unable to turn back into the swarm. Not even ash was left by the end. The demon was dead. Not banished, but annihilated. The talisman had done that, Fulcan was certain. As he had killed it, he beheld the endless flame again, but in snatched flashes. Exhausted, its meaning eluded him for now. Vulcan wanted to fall. He badly needed rest. Instead, he turned. The barrier of putrescence dissolved. The last of Aghalbor's power turned to mist, and then to nothing. Vulcan's sons had their backs to him. They faced a horde of red-skinned demons, revealed by the second barrier's collapse. The drakes were sorely outnumbered. Something called to Vulcan, begging to be unleashed. He felt the fire. He clutched the talisman.
Not a compass. Never that. Something else. Something my father gave me. Something he forged with my hand.
Vulcan had forged it, but he did not yet know how to wield it, or even if he should wield it. What would he wreak if he did? He had to act. He was weakened. The demons would slay them. A ferocious arc of lightning fell amongst the creatures. It coursed like wildfire, turning the red-skinned demons into blackened husks. The storm abated, and from its wrath stepped a seer.
"Deathfire," uttered Vulcan, causing his sons to turn.
"Father, you live,"
said Gargo. Vulcan nodded, but looked beyond his sons.
"You have returned," he said.
The drakes turned back to regard the stranger in their midst, who gave a shallow bow. The old man of the mountain had come amongst them, the truth of his provenance laid bare. An Eldar, judging by his garb. One Vulcan had met before, judging by his eyes. The seer wore black robes under runic armor. A strange helm masked his features, and he clutched an ornate alien staff that resonated power. Behind the seer, the battle raged on. The Emperor's army had almost retreated in its entirety now, but the gap in the door remained.
"You cannot go that way, Lord of Drakes," said the seer. "I can show you another."
Vulcan staggered up to the seer, waving away offers of help from his sons.
"What is your stake in all of this? Why go to such lengths to get me to Terra?"
The seer canted his head. With the Eldar's face hidden by the elaborate helm, Vulcan could only guess at the creature's mood.
"I have done much more, I assure you," he said, "to reach you here at this moment. This crucial skein, I have done terrible things."
"You have not answered my question, seer."
"Such arrogance even from you. Must there always be an answer? Have you not seen enough already to understand? You do not die here."
He gestured to the drakes.
"They do not die here. If you can reach beyond the ignorance of your species and accept that there are forces in the universe which even mankind cannot hope to understand or master."
"Your reasons, seer," said Vulcan. "I must know and judge the truth of it for myself. Remove your helm so I might see your face."
"There is little time for it. I have seen what happens next if you refuse."
He sighed with centuries-long resignation, but reached up and slowly took off his helm. Far from duplicitous or self-assured, the Eldar looked weary and old for one of his immortal kind.
"My concerns are not so different from yours," he said,
his voice different without the filter of his mask, more tired and not nearly so aloof.
"I was part of a plan. I believed it to be right. I was wrong. I wrote another plan from fate."
"We cannot trust this creature," said Gargo.
"What other choice do we have?"
answered Zaitos. The seer turned his inscrutable gaze upon Zaitos.
"None, son of Themis. And yet here I am trusting you, putting all my hope in mankind."
He looked back to Vulcan.
"It was not meant to be your path. It was your brother's, the one you called Gorgon, if that brings any comfort. I witnessed his death. Every skein led to it. No act you could have taken would have prevented it. He rejected the path. I was wrong then, too.
but what you do next will determine if your brother's sacrifice was in vain. Do not submit to the laughter of thirsting gods, Vulcan. It is the cry of the lost and the damned.
Vulcan looked to the hordes, at the demons now hurrying for his blood and soul, at the ones still fighting at the gate. The last of the defending army had all but stepped through, but the way yet remained open. It could stay that way for an age, and still Vulcan would not get through the legions in his path.
"What must I do?" he asked.
The seer stepped back to carve a circular rune into the ground with his staff. After a muttered incantation, the rune began to glow, as if a bright light burned through its cracks, and then it suddenly fell away and took the ground with it. A maelstrom of light swirled within, a writhing tempest racked by lightning.
"This is the last time our paths will cross," said the seer. "I have done all I can for mankind."
He sounded sad.
"The path will close as soon as you pass through it. Do not wait."
The seer vanished, swept up by the same storm that had presaged his arrival. Vulcan was left alone with his sons. The talisman still felt warm to the touch, but he chose to say nothing, for what could he say that made any sense?
"To have come this far and fought this hard, to be within sight of Terra itself," said Gargo,
his gaze on the way ahead to the demon horde.
"Thwarted and cast into an uncertain fate," said Abidemi.
"Our path has ever been uncertain," said Zaitos, "and we have walked it regardless. Fate brought us here, but our brotherhood is what has kept us alive. I trust in that now, as I always have."
A great sorrow fell upon Vulcan's face then, tempered by pride and admiration for his sons. Staring down into the maelstrom, he felt a hand upon his shoulder.
"Where you go, we follow," said Zaitos. "Wherever it leads us."
Together, they stepped into the storm.